Well, we've been talking about this idea of being set apart, and it all stemmed from a verse that Joe had preached on in 1 Peter chapter 2, and so I want to read it one more time with you, just to remind you of kind of the direction that we're coming from and where we're going. Peter writes, "But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, or a people of God's own possession, that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." It's been a rough week for us. I mean, not for me personally. I've actually had a fairly good week. My family's been sick. I've been fighting it like crazy. Maybe today, I don't know, I'm starting to feel that tickle, so who knows? Maybe I'll get sick today. That'd be perfect timing. Anyway, but it's been, for us as a country, it's been a pretty rough week. It's been a lot of stuff going on, And you know, it's just, I don't know what maybe I'm more sensitive to it now than I would be normally with the elections coming up, and like some of the stuff happened really close. A friend of mine used to serve in a church up in Burlington, and so I kind of have a small connection with what's going on up there, and then there's all that stuff that's going on in the South. It's just a lot of unrest, a lot of people who are disappointed, a lot of people who are very disgusted or just frustrated or whatever. And there's a lot of folks that feel like maybe this is like the worst time our country has seen in a very, very, very long time. Well, I want to tell you that it is a bad time for us. It is bad. But our country hasn't even existed for a very, very long time. I mean, compared to most countries out there, we're not even a teenager yet. And there have been some really dark times in our country's history in the past. I mean, just think about the Wild West and all of the lawlessness that took place, or even during the Civil War, more United States citizens died than any other war. There's just been a lot of really, really dark times in our very short existence as a country. And that's not to say that things aren't bad now. And, you know, but what I am excited about, what I am inspired by, is what this verse proclaims, which is that God is calling us out of that darkness into his marvelous light. There's really, you know, there's a lot of people who have a very pessimistic view about the future. There's a lot of people that feel like, you know, I recently read a poll where over 60% of the people that were polled said that they would vote for any other candidate other than the two that are offered right now. And I look at that and I think to myself, I don't remember that poll coming up before in presidential elections. That seems to be unique. I'm sure there have been people that have felt that way in the past. But for over half of the folks that were polled, that tells me that there's a lot of people who aren't really eagerly anticipating the next 4 years and the leadership and that sort of thing. And I just want to tell you, if you're one of those folks, it's just like you're looking at the world today and you're thinking, man, this is just, it just seems to get darker and darker and darker. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. Because God makes a promise to us to call us out of that darkness into his marvelous light. And we don't have to wait until heaven to experience that. And that's, so if there's anything that you would get out of this series of messages, it is that here's the opportunity to be set apart and to be able to experience that. I love a good story. I love a good story. I hate spoilers. I mentioned that on the website. We have this little getting ready for Sunday thing. I hate spoilers. One day I was at church and there was a football game like today. By the way, I will get you out in time for the football game. Promise. There was a football game like today, only it started at 10 o'clock. It was one of those East Coast games. And so I was DVRing the game because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to go home and watch it. And so I'm DVRing the game. And then the end of the service, I'm like packing everything up, making sure everything's okay, talking to a few people that I need to talk to. But I'm heading out the door. I want to get home, have something to eat, and watch the football game, right? And then right as I'm getting ready to leave the auditorium, one of the yahoos in the back puts the final score up on the screen. Yeah, okay, you know what I'm talking about, right? I hate that. I hate it ruins, you know, it just ruins it. And, you know, and I think, I was on my way home, I'm thinking, oh, I was so upset. And I'm like, but what are you so upset about? You still get to watch the game, but it ruins it, right? I mean, I know whatever's gonna happen in the game has already happened, and it doesn't matter how loud I cheer, even when the game is live, it doesn't make any, you know, but it ruined it for me, right? And I think that a lot of times when it comes to stories, movies, books, whatever, we hate spoilers. We hate it when people spoil the end for us because it takes all of the intrigue and suspense and a lot of the excitement and emotion out of it because you know how it's going to end. Well, that's kind of the way it is with this story. If you've been in church for very long at all, you know this story and you know how it ends. And so the problem is that I want to tell you this story, I want to talk to you about this story, but you're not going to get it because you know the end. If you didn't know the end, it would mean so much more to you. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to pretend like you don't know the end. I want you to try really hard to put yourself in the place of the different, you know, elements in this story so that and how they must have felt when it was happening. Okay, we're going to talk about a hero of mine from Scripture, and his name is Abraham. I love Abraham. I love a lot of guys in Scripture, but Abraham is a big hero of mine. He's an amazing guy, and it's kind of cool. What I love about Abraham is how God used him in spite of a lot of problems that he had. Now, he wasn't always Abraham. He was Abram, and we're going to pick up the story right there, and we're going to talk about, in Genesis chapter 12, kind of the beginning of God's encounter, not the very beginning, but towards the beginning of God's encounter with Abraham. This is what it says, Genesis chapter 12, verses, are you ready for a story? Are you guys good with that? Okay, all right. Well, if you're not, too bad. Sit down. All right. The Lord said to Abram, leave your country, your people, and your father's household and go to the land that I'll show you. Now I want to stop there just for a second and say this. That's pretty vague. Would you agree? Get up and go. Go where? Yep, that's it. I'll tell you when you need to know. You're on a need-to-know basis, and right now you don't need to know. Now, I don't know about you, but no. Mm-mm. I love GPS, man. I'm a GPS fan. Right? And when the GPS says, you know, time to destination, you know, 2 hours and 14 minutes, that's not how long it's going to take me. That's the time to beat. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how I love a plan. I love it all mapped out. I like to see where all the traffic stuff's going. I love it. Abraham didn't have that. All he had was God saying, get up and go. Where? I'll tell you when you need to know. Just go. Start moving. Wow. Goes on and says, and I will make you, listen to this promise, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great, now listen to this, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and whoever curses you, I will curse. Listen to this. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. This is a huge promise. This isn't just, oh, you know, you're going to be a blessing to the First Baptist Church in Toledo, Washington, which would be great. I hope I can be that. This is not just, you're going to be a blessing to your family or your community. He says, the entire world will be blessed by you. Do you understand? Do you understand the scope and the vastness of what God is saying? He is making a promise that every single human being on the surface of the planet, in all recorded history, would be blessed by Abraham. Abram. Sorry, get confused. That's a big deal. That's a big promise. And so you think about it, you're like, let's put yourself in Abram's shoes. Try. And you don't know the end of the story. All you know is what I've given you so far. What would you do? I mean, I know what I would do. I'd be like, I need more information. And if I can't get it from God, I'll get it from somebody. I'll call my pastor, or I'll call, you know, some Christian friends, or I'll do something. I'll read a commentary or see what, you know, maybe Billy Graham thinks about this or whatever. I would try and find, but not Abram. Look what it says. Verse 4, very next verse. So Abram left. As the Lord had told him, he just left. Just like, didn't question, didn't argue, didn't debate, didn't reason. He just got up and left. That's pretty good. Pretty good. Took Lot with him. It says Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. Now, I don't know, you know, I'm going to be 50 next year. I'm excited about that. Some of you, you know, 50 is like this distant thing in the rearview mirror, right? I'm going to be 50. And I've imagined what my life will be like when I'm 75. You know, I'm thinking I'd like to still be doing ministry, maybe be the oldest living youth pastor. I'd like to still, you know, I wouldn't mind that at all. I will say this, I don't see myself being quite as active as I am now. Like, I wouldn't mind playing a little bit more golf, since I don't play any right now. 75 might be a good time. Used to play golf, and I had kids. You guys know how that goes sometimes. There's things I'd like to do, but for the most part, I'll tell you what I'm not thinking I'm going to be doing is completely reinventing my life at 75. And here God says to Abram, I want you to pull up all these deep roots that you've put down, and I want you to just get up and go. And I'm not even so much as going to give you a clue as to what you're now. If you're 20 years old, That's, you know, you pack a suitcase and throw it in the back of your 19, you know, whatever, Chevy Vega station wagon car, whatever, and you go, right? But he's 70, he's 75 years old, and he goes. And now 10 years go by. So Abram's out, and he's like doing what God wants him to do. He's going, and 10 years go by. So now, how old is he? 85. Good job. You guys are mathematicians, I can tell. Okay, so he's 85. And listen to what it says. This is in Genesis 15, verse 5. It says, and God took him outside and said, Abram, look up at the heavens and count the stars, if you indeed can count them. Last night I got up, as old men tend to do in the nighttime. I got up and I looked out the bathroom window. Did you guys see last night? It was beautiful. I mean, there were just the stars were just amazing. And I'm looking out there through my little window, staring up at the sky and thinking, man, I knew this verse was in my message today. And I thought, man, could you imagine? I mean, there's lights and stuff around my house that make it, you can't see all the stars. I bet you Abram, when he looked up and he just thought, wow, can I count them? I'm 85. Yeah, I don't have enough years left to count them. And God says to him, so shall your offspring be. In other words, you're going to have that many kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, you know, your heirs, the people that follow you. He didn't even have one star. Abram didn't even have one star. He's 85 years old. He doesn't even have one star. And look what it says. Abraham believed the Lord, and God credited it to him as righteousness. Believed the Lord. He just believed him. You know how hard that is? And how easy at the same time. He believed God when God says, I am almighty, I am omniscient, I am omnipotent, I promise this to you, it's going. And Abraham believed him. Didn't just believe, well, yeah, okay, God, if you say so. No, huh? He believed him. But you know, even when we believe God, you know, you ever do this? You ever start off doing really good? Like, you know, you hear a message, or you go to, like maybe you go to camp, or the ladies got back from the women's retreat, and maybe God really spoke with you and really dealt with you, and you're like, I'm doing it. I'm gonna believe God. I'm gonna take God at his word. I'm gonna trust him. I'm gonna adjust my life to what he's told me. And so you get going and you're doing great. A couple of days go by, maybe a week goes by, maybe a month goes by, and what happens? Yeah, you kind of stop. Well, so 24 years go by. And, you know, Abraham still doesn't have the son that God promised him. Sometime after that encounter with God, he and Sarah decided, well, you know what, maybe God's just forgotten. Or maybe God needs us to help a little bit. And so Sarah kind of hatches this plan, his wife. She says, why don't you, and this was totally acceptable in that day. This wasn't you know, really inappropriate like it would be today. But he says, look, you need an heir. God is obviously not making it happen. I mean, I know he promised you when you were 70. You're not 75 anymore, Abraham. You're older. We need to do something about this. And so she says, why don't you sleep with Hagar, my lead maidservant, and then she'll provide an heir for you because you need an heir. And so he did. And sure enough, Ishmael was born. Now, it wasn't the son that God promised, but for Abram and Sarai, it was the best that they could, you know, come up with on their own. There's always consequences to come up with on your own. There's always consequences. And the consequences of Abraham and Sarai's choice are still being felt, reverberating all over the Middle East today. But in Genesis chapter 17, God reestablishes. Now, Abraham was 99 years old, it says. He was 99 years old, and the Lord appeared to him and reestablishes his promises. I am, now listen to God. God says, I am the Lord God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless. You've really messed up. I mean, a lot had happened, and Abraham was already really regretting the decision he'd made with Ishmael and all of that and what had taken place. And so God reaffirms them. He says, I will confirm my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers. But you need to walk before me as blameless. And then a year later, Isaac's born. A year later, 25 years after God had told him, you're going to have an heir, Isaac is born. It took God 25 years. What did it take God? It took Abraham. God working in Abraham's life. 25 years to be ready to be the father of Isaac. Now, how old is Abraham? 100 years old. I get a little nervous when I think about Elias is 4, so I'm going to be putting Elias through college when I'm in my 60s. I get a little nervous about that, and then I mention it to Mike, and he just rolls his eyes, because Mike's going to be like 97 or something when he's... He's not that old. But he's going to be, he'll be, when Joanna's in college, Mike will be older than I'll be when Elias... Anyway, but can you imagine being 100 years old and having an infant? I can't imagine that. That would be horrible. I mean, it'd be so hard. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah, and as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised, and Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age. At the very time God had promised him, in other words, in the fullness of time, when Abraham and Sarah were ready to be the parents. And I got to tell you now, this is no just ordinary story. This story is one of, I would consider to be, the most pivotal moments in the history of humankind. And I'm really not overstating that. This was no small thing. That's why it took 25 years for Abraham and Sarah to be ready to be Isaac's mom and dad. Abraham gave the name Isaac to his son that Sarah bore to him. And so I want to look at this, and we're going to look at this story. That's kind of by way of introduction. We're going to look at this one story. It's in Genesis 22. It's, like I said, it's a story you're familiar with. And there are three things I want you to pull away from this that will really help you when it comes to living a life of worship. The whole point of being set apart is that we would live a life of worship. You know, I'm pretty excited about heaven. I really am. I'm not, don't get me wrong, I don't have any kind of a death wish or anything like that, but I can't wait. I honestly can't wait to go to heaven. And there are a lot of reasons why, but I just, the main one, if I was to sum it up in all in one kind of idea, is that heaven is going to be pretty great. I mean, can we agree on that? Heaven is going to be really pretty great. But if you break it down and say, okay, but what is heaven going to be about? To just state it as simply as I can, heaven is going to be one long, never-ending act of worship. And it's going to be great. And the good news, and this is what I want you to get today, is that you don't have to wait until you die to begin to experience a little bit of what that's going to be like. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to look at this particular encounter with Abraham, and I want you to think about three things that will help you to live a life of worship. And the first one is this. I want you to see how Abraham believed and acted in faith, and I want you to learn to do the same thing. So let's get started. Genesis 22, verse 1 says this. Sometime later, God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Abraham, here I am, Abraham replied. Now, I want to stop there for a second. You know, my phone at home, you know, my landline, okay, it rings a lot, and it's never anybody I want to talk to. Have you noticed that? Like, it's always, especially right now, it's like, oh, it's like political this, you know, it's some guy telling me my Windows thing is infected with a virus, or it's, you know, it's all this stuff. It's never somebody I want to talk to. No, I don't know why, but nobody I want to talk to calls my home phone, all right? Now, don't start calling my home phone, because I hardly ever answer it anymore, but unless you have to, then you can. But it's interesting to me, when someone calls, and I'll look at the caller ID, I don't recognize that, and I'll hold the phone up to my ear, and I can tell you within probably 5 seconds if it's somebody I want to talk to. If that 5 seconds is just silence, click, because that's somebody that's just trying to sell me something. If it's, you know, depending on what they say, I could tell you. I used to try to be polite, and blah, I don't even bother anymore. I just hang up. I'm like, no, I can't be polite 9 times in a row. I just can't do it. I just, you know, I'm not rude. I don't go out of my way to be rude. I just hang up as politely as I can. Sorry. Anyway, and so I guess it would be helpful if I said sorry before I hung up on them. Anyway, but this is what it says. So God, but Abraham immediately recognizes God's voice. Immediately. Well, of course, 40 years have gone by. 40 years since the first calling of Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. 40 years have gone by, and Abraham has tuned his ear to hear God's voice, and he's also tuned his life to respond to God's voice. But here's what he says, here I am. He doesn't say, what do you want? He doesn't say, uh-oh. He says, here I am. In other words, he's basically saying, yes. Yep, I mean, whatever you're going to ask me, yep, I'll just do it. I'll just do it. We need to get that place, to that place where we just believe in God and act in faith. He says this, God says to him, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah and sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I'll tell you about. Now, Moriah is outside of Israel, or outside Jerusalem. It's kind of a hilly country there, a lot of mountains and stuff. It's kind of more of a region. There isn't a specific Mount Moriah, but it is a mountainous region. And in that area, just outside of Jerusalem, there are other mountains. One you might be familiar with called Golgotha, or Mount Calvary. So it was close to that. It was close to that area where God had said to Abraham, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love. You know, and I first read this. Again, we know the end of the story, right? But think about it from Abraham's perspective, right? 15 years, likely. 15 years he's lived with this son, Isaac. Isaac's 15 years old. He's a teenager, but not really. He's a young man. I mean, in that culture, you were a man at 13. And so Abraham had grown really fond of him. And I think to myself, God, what are you doing? This is just, at best, cruel and petty. And at worst, it's sinful. And how do you do this? This guy waits 100 years, 25 years after you promise him to have a son. And then you give him 15 years to fall in love with the kid. And then you tell him, I need you to go out and kill him? I'm kind of getting mad at God as I'm reading this. And to make matters worse, you really rub it in. Your son, your only son, which, by the way, there was Ishmael, right? But this is the son of promise. This is the one that God promised. That's why he calls him his only son. Isaac, whom you love. God makes it really clear. I know exactly how much you love this kid. I have a precocious four-year-old named Elias. And I've oftentimes been upset with him, but I've never thought for a minute that I would take him out on the mountain and sacrifice him. You know, it just seems so ridiculous. And yet, God says, go and do this. So let me show you how Abraham responds. Early the next morning, Abraham got up, saddled his donkey, and he took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. And when he cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place that God had told him about. Just like that. No debate, no argument. Now, I don't know what that night must have been like. I mean, I can't imagine it wasn't at least a little bit restless for Abraham. Think about what he was about to do the next day. Plenty of time to talk yourself out of it. Plenty of time to consult with who knows who, you know. Can you imagine saying to Sarah, you know, Sarah says, hey, where are you going? You and Isaac. Oh, I'm taking our son, our only son, the son that you love. I'm going to take him up out on the mountains in Moriah and sacrifice him to God. You want me to pick something up at the grocery store on my way home? I mean, could you imagine that conversation with, I couldn't. My wife, she would throw herself down in front of me. But he did. He got up and he set out for that place. He acted in faith because he believed in God. And then he continued to trust God. Now, I don't know how far it is from where Abraham was to where God was leading him. Remember, it was a region. No one knows exactly which mountain this happened on. But there was plenty of time in the process of cutting the wood and walking, you know, and there was plenty of time for Abraham to be thinking about this and thinking a lot about it. I imagine it wasn't, you know, I imagine this was first thing on his mind, what he was about to do. But to make matters, I suppose, much worse, his son Isaac, it says in verse 7, spoke up and said to his father, he said, Abraham, father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and the wood are here, Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham answered and said, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. Now, when I first read that, I remember thinking to myself, Abraham, you sneaky devil, you. This kid's 15, right? Abraham's 115. I don't think Isaac would have had too much of a problem outrunning his dad if he wanted to get away, right? You know what I'm saying? Like if I tell this kid, oh, well, son, it's funny you should ask. You know, Isaac's, dad has lost it and I'm out of here, right? But that wasn't it. He wasn't trying to be deceptive or sneaky. He was being sincere. He was just letting them know, God, don't worry, God's got this. Don't worry, God's got this. And so the two of them went on together. They were both in it. They were both, I mean, it's interesting. Isaac's like, wait a second, you know, this isn't, I mean, he could have questioned his dad. He didn't. He just said, okay, that's what you say, Dad. I trust you. I trust God. We'll go on. So in verse 9, it says, when they reached the place that God had told him about, Abraham built an altar, and there he arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood, and then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. Now, all the way up to this point, I'm like, it's, you know, we know the end of the story, which really makes it, this would be the point where everyone is collectively holding their breath, right? This is the point in the movie where your wife is clutching your arm and she's like, you know, and the heart's pounding. And don't think for a second that wasn't the case with Abraham. Because this is where it's like, okay, you know, your faith is tested in the fire of reality. I mean, it's one thing to walk all the way to the mountain. It's another thing to get all, you know, you're looking around. Another thing, build the whole altar. You're still looking, okay, God, we're getting kind of close now. I know you're going to do something, right? 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 But to continue on. And remember, Isaac's 15. He's not like, Dad, why are you tying me up? He knows why he's getting tied up. He knows what's about to happen. And then the knife gets, can you just even imagine as a parent pulling that knife with the full intent that you're going to obey God? What could possibly possess a person, a dad, to do that? There's no record of any conversation between Abraham and Isaac in the middle of this. This is what we have. But the author of Hebrews gives us insight as to what Abraham was thinking. This is what it says in Hebrews 11, chapter 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. You see, Abraham had a tremendous faith in God. It goes on and says, he who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. In other words, God had already promised Abraham that Isaac was going to have kids, but he's 15. He doesn't have any kids yet. And so Abraham, by faith, just said, okay, God knows what he's doing. On a human level, it made absolutely no sense whatsoever. But to Abraham, it didn't have to make sense because he had faith to continue through. It goes on and it says, Abraham reasoned or thought or just imagined in his mind that God would raise the dead. God could raise the dead. And figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. He just knew. He knew. You know, even if Isaac dies, God has promised that this will be the beginning of my heirs, my lineage. And so I'm just trusting God. It makes no sense, but I'm just trusting God. But I got to tell you, even with that kind of faith, to draw the knife and plunge it into the heart of your own child. Oh, I mean, I could maybe get to like, but that last, I just imagine what it must have been like for Abraham to look into the eyes of his boy and by his own hand willingly sacrifice him, his son, His only begotten Son. The Son that he loved. I couldn't do it. Of course, the next verse teaches us how to worship in spirit and in truth. So the end of the story, if you don't know it, you're kind of nervous about it, don't worry. The angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." I like that he called him twice, right? Like, "Hey, wait, 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 okay." Okay. And what does Abraham say? "Here I am." Oh, I bet Abraham was never so happy to hear his voice. "Yes, yes. Whatever you want, yes. Whatever you want, yes. Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." You see, God knew that if there was anything in this world that Abraham loved more or would be tempted to love more than God, it would be his son. He knew that. And I think Abraham knew that too. I think Abraham knew that if there was anything that he would be tempted to put before God in his life, it would be his son. It goes on in verse 13 and says, "Abraham looked up there in a thicket. He saw a ram caught by its horns. So he went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son," instead of his son. So Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide," Jehovah Jireh, "the Lord will provide." And to this day, it is said, that on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. And it was, not by Abraham, not by Isaac. There was a sacrifice that was necessary. It was provided by God. Now, the whole point of this journey was to worship God. We're going to go to the region of Moriah and we're going to worship God. And I imagine that Abraham was, by faith, determined he was going to do it no matter what. Think about what Job said, "The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name. I'll just worship God anyway." But could you imagine what that worship was like in this case? They get right to the brink of Abraham having to slay his son, and God provides, comes through with the promise. God comes through with the promise, and there worship. When Abraham cut up that ram and laid it on that altar and he saw that it was a ram and not his son and he lit that fire, I imagine that their worship was the best worship they'd ever experienced ever in their life. I think it was a lot like maybe what heaven's going to be like when it finally really rings clear in our head just how wonderful it was to have Jesus be the sacrifice instead of us. Jesus spoke to a woman from Samaria in John chapter 4 about this idea of worship. He said this to her. He said, "A time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers," the worshipers that really get it, "they worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth." And the idea behind this is summed up pretty simply. If on the way to Moriah, you had asked Abraham, "Abraham, do you think that God will provide a sacrifice?" He would say to you, "I think he will." "Do you think that God that he will keep his promises to you?" "I think he will." Do you think that God is powerful enough and loving enough to come through for you and to provide all this for you?" "Yes, I think he is." But if you could stand next to that altar where you see Abraham and Isaac kneeling down in front of that sacrifice, and you were to look into the eyes of Abraham and ask him, "Abraham, do you believe that God will always keep his promises?" He would say, "I know he will. Because the Lord God is my provider. I believed it before, but now I know it. I worshiped him in spirit, but now I worship him in truth. I know he is the Lord God that provides." And today, more than anything, at the end of this journey that we've taken together, I want you to believe in your heart of hearts that the Lord God who calls you to be set apart will love you and will provide for you. And there is a bright and marvelous light that he is leading us into in our families, in our church, in our communities, and in our nation. And it's not going to come through the government, and it's not going to come through self-help, but it's going to come through him and through us being set apart to him. Let's live a life of worship. And let's start with this. Sound good? Bible says, on the night that he was betrayed, Jesus took bread. And he broke it. And he said to his disciples, "This is my body, broken for you. Every time you eat this bread, do that in remembrance of me." And then he took the cup and he says, "This cup is the new covenant, the blood of the new covenant. Not the old covenant, not the Abraham covenant, not the Moses covenant. This is my blood. This cup is my blood of the new covenant. And every time you drink this cup and eat this bread, do this in remembrance of me." Do not drink the cup or eat the bread in an unworthy manner. He goes on to say, you know, first, you know, evaluate your life. Ask yourself, I would say this morning, ask yourself this question. Have you, as much as you know, surrendered all of you to everything you know about God? And are you, as much as you can, living a life of worship? If you're not, I have great news for you. You can spend the next few minutes getting that right with God. You see, it takes God exactly this long to move you from being completely separated from him to completely united with him. When your heart is ready, it takes him that long. And if it takes him that long to move you from being completely separated from him to in right relationship with him, then how quickly can he take one of his sons, one of his daughters, and move them from a place of not really being in faith to a place of genuine faith? That long. Spend some time worshiping the Lord. And then when it seems right with you, come. Come and take the bread and the cup and worship him. Worship him.